some of the stars through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. It's Wednesday night, and it's the last Wednesday of the month. Is it the last Wednesday of the month? I got to look at the calendar here. Well, I'm going to say it's the last Wednesday of the month, but it really, I don't think is, because we've got next Wednesday, the 30th. I don't know how to read a calendar, apparently, but tonight, I think I've got this backed up on October, November as well, but it's like Gay Week on Rated G Radio, but tonight is Super Gay Radio. We're going to be welcoming blogger, activist, dad, superstar Rob Watson in just a couple of moments. But I just wanted to give some shout-outs and talk about a couple of things first before we get going with the show. Big shout-out to trucker Patty Spangler last night for being on the show for Transgender Tuesday. And that got lots of people talking and listening to the show and great feedback on Facebook. So thanks to everybody who was part of the show last night. And then on Thursday, tomorrow night, we have LGBT author Jace Payne. And he sent me his book. I have not – here's the deal. Whenever I have authors on, I really do read their books, but I don't usually read it until we get closer to the show date. But with three authors on the show last week – my mind kind of like needs to decompress a little bit from the reading. So tonight after the show, I'm going to dig into Jace's book, and we're going to talk to him tomorrow night about his writing, his background, why he chose to be an LGBT author, and all of the cool stuff, especially as a first-time guest to the show. I cannot wait to have Jace Payne on, and I think he's from down south somewhere. If memory serves, he's like in Kentucky or Louisiana or someplace really cool. I wonder if he has an accent. He gets bigger points if he does. And then a Friday show live at 9 a.m., we have Jules Day. And you go like, who in the heck is Jules Day? Wait till you hear her music. She's going to be live from Paris, France at 9 a.m. California time. I tell you that it's an early day again for the Friday dance party. So you can set your clocks. Now, here's the deal. If you miss the show live, technically, you won't even know. So let's just say you wanted to listen to the show at noon or 7 p.m. or 5 p.m. or whatever the case may be. And when you press the play button, it's just like you're listening to it live. So I won't tell anybody if you can't listen at 9 a.m. because you're at your J-O-B or you're sleeping in or whatever is happening in your life. But Jules Day is going to be our guest. She has a new album out. She categorizes her music as like bossa nova. Who does not like a good bossa nova? I don't know. But you are going to love Jules' music, and I cannot wait to have her on the show with you. This coming weekend, too, if you're a writer in Southern California, if you're going to the Southern California Writers Conference, let's see here. I've got a couple of notes here that Jeff Michaels, he has a brand new book out. It's Tosses. I should know this because I was looking at it the other day. Tosses something, but it's book one in a series of three. It has just come out, and we're going to have Jeff on in the next few weeks to talk about his books and all of that kind of stuff. But you'll remember him as last year's guest on Tuesday when it would be called Tarot Tuesday. And Jeff did that for about 6 months, and we had so much fun. But I said, you know, Jeff, we need to make this like a limited run so, you know, we don't have you on and oversaturate you. So he's taking a break from the show right now. But we're going to have him back to talk about his work as an author, which I always think is cool. And then on Sunday, the 27th, I've been invited by Chacho Hollywood. That's a dog. But his owner, Juana, who I met earlier this year via Chacho Hollywood. He's a Chihuahua. He's in all the dog movies and things like that. They're having some big event at the Dog Beach here in Huntington Beach. It starts at 8 a.m. on Sunday, September 27th. So if you want to come hang out at the Huntington Beach Dog Beach, because we have a dog beach, you can come hang out starting at 8 a.m. and you can meet superstars like Chacho Hollywood and their owners. I don't know what is involved in that, but I'm really kind of intrigued. If I'm up at that hour, I'm always up, but you know, whether or not I want to be presentable and you know, have my public persona on, maybe a different thing. But it starts at 8 o'clock in the morning. So if you want to do something this coming Sunday, I'm telling you, that's what's happening. And now, Without further ado, long overdue, welcome to Mr. Rob Watson. And Rob, it's always fun to have you back for Super Gay Radio.
I love it. I love being on Super Gay Radio.
Isn't that crazy?
And I'm such an easy guest. I was just thinking as you were talking about that, because, you know, I host my own show, and you're right. Authors are, I mean, none of them are listening, but they're such a pain. They give us all this homework that we have to do before we talk to them. And, you know, you're really easy because you have great music, and they just listen to music, and we're ready to go. And my stuff's easy to read. So, yeah, we're optimal guests.
Well, we're going to talk about your latest read, A Gay Dad Invites Pope Francis to Meet My Family Face-to-Face, the new civil rights movement. We're going to talk about that in just a second. But, you know, it is interesting because, you know, I talk with a lot of writers who are on the show, and I purposefully don't book more than like one or two authors a month. And just the planets were in alignment to have three last week to get Jace on the show tomorrow night. So, you know, sometimes you just take it when you can get it. And sometimes it's, okay, these are the only dates I've got open. And like I tell you, Rob, I book guests first come, first serve, and I don't play favorites.
Right.
It's just like, you tell me when you want to be on the show, that's the date, and then I write you in ink in the book, and that's it. So if you don't get the date that you want, not my problem, you know, and I don't mean to say it like that, but not my problem, because I just leave it open for everybody when they want to, you know, be on. And so that was my problem for scheduling all these writers last week. But I really do read the books. And so often I'll hear back from the authors afterwards that, you know, that was really interesting being on your show, because usually when I'm being interviewed, nobody ever reads the book. And I'm like, well, why the hell would you be on – I mean, why would you be interviewing somebody if you're not going to even bother to make an attempt at reading the book? Now, I get it that everybody's busy and everybody has a J-O-B and whatever the case may be. However, you know, I think even a half an hour before the show, you know – which I've had to do sometimes, I've actually sat down and said, okay, I've got to crack the book and at least get, you know, two or three chapters in before the show starts, so I have at least a flavor of what's going on. But I really do read the books.
Yeah, me too. And and don't get me wrong, I was actually teasing because I love writers and they've been the most fascinating guests. But
right.
I definitely read the book, and it's funny because I will ask questions that they don't see coming based on reading their
book.
Because
you read the book.
You know, it's like, yeah, it's like, it's where they're actually stumped or have to think about it. And I've had Barney Frank was on my show, and I read his book, and got really fascinating questions and answers with him, but, you know, had to read it, because otherwise, you know, they essentially give you their press release as they're talking
right.
to you, and yeah, you know, that's no fun. It's more fun to really get them. Yeah.
Do you think, Rob, you know, part of the reason we might get feedback like that is that we're able to devote larger chunks of time to particular guests? You know, some of the shows that, you know, people are on, you know, because I listen to, you know, my serious shows. And I say my serious. I mean, you know, like Sirius XM, not my non-funny shows, but the Sirius XM satellite radio. I listen to that all day long, whether I'm in the office or I'm in the car. And you'll have, you know, a big name guest come on, and, you know, they'll be on and be lucky to have the guest for like 7 minutes or 9 minutes or 11 minutes or something like that for a segment. And, you know, sometimes you feel like you're getting a really juicy interview and you've got like 7 minutes, and you're like, and, you know, I sit back and think about, if I only had 7 minutes to get my point across, I'm not sure I'd even show up. And that's why I like doing this show, because, you know, we can take an hour, and granted, you know,
right.
you have me babbling because I ate, you know, too many dark chocolate covered walnuts, or I had a glass of iced tea or something like that. But, you know, generally the guest gets to talk quite a bit, and that's always the goal for me, you know?
Yeah. And I think too, it's you and I are motivated to do this differently than maybe other people or other interviewers are. We're not just showing up because we're going to get a paycheck, you know, although we'd like to get a paycheck, but we're showing up because we really enjoy doing this. And
right.
when you're going to do this, you want to ask the really good questions. You want a really interesting conversation. You know, you don't want to just ask the stuff that, you know, some assistant has put together and say, ask these 10 questions and, you know, shut up while they answer the question. You know, that's not what we're in it for.
I have had a publicist say, well, you know, the author would like to be asked these particular questions. And I'm just like, Okay, whatever you want to do, that's fantastic. You know, because again, it's the spotlight for the author, or, you know, the musician, or the filmmaker, or the whatever. I don't care. You know, but you know, I've got my list of questions that I have pre-written out for that particular author, and you know, sometimes I use the same questions, and sometimes I have different questions. But you know, generally, I always want to know, you know, Rob, why did you start writing? To me, that's an interesting question, because it could have been, well, my third grade teacher, Mrs. Duncan. You know, she inspired me when we had to write Mary Had a Little Lamb, or whatever the case is. But your story is going to be interesting, you know. And I think everybody's story like that is interesting. But, you know, once you get past that, it's like, well, let's talk about your book. You know, so like tomorrow night after Jace is on the show, then I'm really going to start, you know, diving into my next book. Because on Tuesday of next week, I've got Rutanya Alda, and I hope I'm saying her name right. She played Carol Ann in Mommy Dearest, and she sent me an advanced copy of her book. You've probably seen the picture on Facebook. It's The Mommy Dearest Diary. And I will spend all weekend reading that. And it's, you know, it's not a million pages long. It's, what, 150 pages. And I'm grateful for the advanced copy. But, you know, for somebody of that note and celebrity, at least, you know, to me, I want to do, you know, do right by her and have read the entire book and have just absorbed it. I had a who was it last week? It was David Swatling and his book called Calvin's Head. He's an LGBT author, and he wrote this, you know, suspense thriller, crazy, crazy book. It's really good, and a lot of twists and turns that make you think you're watching Dynasty in Dallas. But I didn't pick up the book until I think it was like that morning, because I just couldn't do it, because I was trying to reread Bill Sienkiewicz's book from the night before. And I finished the book at 6:46 p.m. The show goes live at 7 p.m. But I read every last page and every last word to get the rest of that book in, and it was worth getting to the last page.
That's great. Yeah, it's hard. I haven't really interviewed a lot of fiction writers, to be honest with you. It's, most of mine have been either commentary authors or, and you and I probably both interviewed Greg Archer on his last book.
Well, I'm lucky to say that Greg's a good friend of mine, and you know, since I think Greg is in Hawaii right now and probably not, you know, racing to his, you know, computer at 3 o'clock in the afternoon Hawaii time to sit here and try to listen to the show. My guess would be that would be the case if I were in Hawaii. I wouldn't be doing that right now either. But we did a month long of Greg Archer Grace Revealed on Tuesdays for a month, you know, as the book was getting ready to be launched and so forth. But that was really fun. And he's such an interesting character.
Oh yeah. No, he's great. Yeah. I had him. It was actually, I was hosting alone that night, and we did the show right before he did his signing up here in Santa Cruz. And so we got into his book, and, you know, it was a good interview. I really enjoyed it anyway. Hope it was as good for him as it was for me, let alone the listeners. Yeah.
You know, I think that if the guests have a good time, then the listeners will have a good time. Because, you know, if there's nothing worse in my head than listening to a host that is bored out of his mind, or a guest that can't wait to get off the show. Because you can tell all the time when they're going, oh, my God, you know, I really need to go to the bathroom, or this person just, you know, they have onion breath or whatever the case is, and they want to get out of the studio. And you hear it. And I think, you know, that just really comes across. And at least for me – and I say knock on wood, so I'm pounding on my head right now. I've been very lucky in the guests that I've had on the show here on Rated G Radio, where I really have a genuine interest in what they do. And I think that's one reason why I enjoy doing this so much. You know, and I'm going into my fourth year in 2016 of doing this five nights a week. It's because I get to talk to people that I would probably never get a chance to talk to, who have the most interesting stories to tell. And, you know, and you and I have talked about this, Rob. The thing that I really like about my guests most are not my celebrity guests. And people would say, how dare you say that about a celebrity? Well, celebrities are great, but really they're there to, you know, they're there to push an agenda. They're there really for that 7-minute interview. Anything extra they're doing just because they're nice. And, you know, they're like, yeah, my movie comes out, or my album drops, or my book is out. And, you know, and I get it. I respect it, and I have no problem with it. But the guests I find most fascinating are just the John Q. Publics that, you know, come on and talk about whatever it is they, you know, that they're working on. Or, you know, I say the John Q. Publics, but I mean that in the, you know, even if they're authors or musicians or the whatever, you know, the people that don't really have a huge voice somewhere else. And I love being able to have this be an outlet for them, especially like on a Friday night dance party where you've probably never heard of the group Seven Causes. That's my guest next week out of Arizona. And again, Jules Day, never heard of her, but she's out of Paris, France, and she's going to be the guest this Friday. You know, it just opens up the doors to so many different people that you'd never in a million years think you're ever going to talk to. And I think that is crazy. And that's what you do on Out in Santa Cruz every Saturday night at 7 o'clock, KSCO 1080 AM. And it's outinsantacruz.com if you want to listen online. I listen as often as I can live, but that doesn't always take place. But you've got – who's your guest going to be this week, Rob?
Well, our guest is going to be members of Out in Our Faith, which is up in the Northern California area, our different churches and denominations that are LGBT affirming. They're going to come in, and they're going to be our guests for commentary. The subject is going to be Pope Francis's visit to America. And so we're watching and listening this week to what happens, what he says, who says what, and that'll be a lot of our discussion this weekend. And as you noted, I already have a blog piece, or it's actually not a blog piece, it's now columns out in various publications about that. So that will also feed into the show.
So have you reached 10 billion listeners yet or readers yet with your new article, A Gay Dad Invites Pope Francis to Meet My Family Face-to-Face?
We're a little shy of the 10 billion mark.
Okay.
I've hit a couple thousand, so we'll leave it at that. But
considering you just put this out today, it posted at 5:09, at least the one that I pulled up. So in the last couple of hours, you're doing just awesome numbers.
Yeah, it's hit three publications. So I published it late last night off my own blog, evoltequals.com. And that, I do that honestly just because if I made some glaring error or did something really stupid, that somebody will point it out to me before somebody else actually publishes it. GayStar News was right on the piece, and, you know, they're in the UK. And they had it out early this morning. That's probably the one you saw. And then New Civil Rights Movement, their version of it went out late this afternoon. So between the three of them, they have – and actually, when I say a couple of thousand, that's a couple of thousand shares. People have liked it and shared it with someone else.
Well, so that probably means that you multiply that couple thousand by like 5 or 10, because then, you know, you have everybody who just read it and didn't share it.
Right.
You know, because you have a lot of that too.
Crazy
so.
Bums. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, you know, you hope everybody's going to sit and share all your brilliant stuff. But, you know, if you get a couple thousand in the, you know, the first couple of hours, that's kind of tremendous. Now, how many – I mean, you are pretty much – are you sitting on kind of like cruise control and just going, okay, hurry up, Yahoo. I should be front page. Where are you, Yahoo? Because
Yahoo,
is right now.
Yeah, Yahoo's – I've got a little bit of a process going with the different pieces or different publications that will pick up my stuff. And Yahoo is usually at the end of the road where the next family is one of my regular publications. And they'll be picking this up. And then they send it over to Huffington Post, who about 70% of the time picks up from the next family. And then Yahoo picks it up from Huffington Post. So you usually see it when Huffington Post has it there. So that's how all the plug-ins kind of happen there. But Huffington Post just ran my last piece, which they don't let me know that they're running it. So I kind of fall into it, kind of open it up and go, whoa, oh, there's that. But they just ran my last piece that was my second piece that I ran on Kim Davis and the pseudo-American martyrs, these people who are doing this kind of weird stuff, trying to martyr themselves by fighting LGBT families and people and as if that is going to somehow make them Greek Christians. And she is the latest of that, obviously.
Isn't that just odd?
Odd is almost a complimentary word to what I think
right.
It is. It's a travesty. And, you know, I am a Christian. And just from that perspective alone, I find it disgusting. because Christianity really can be about such better things. And I don't like someone who comes from a similar faith, potentially background as I do, taking that faith and bastardizing it to this thing of hate and ridiculousness. I mean, Kim Davis is just a woman who is not doing her job. I mean, that is what it's all about. And, you know, to play her up in any way, like she's even being true to her faith, doing something good, is ridiculous. And it's an embarrassment. I just, you know, I can't, there's nothing in me that can rationalize it. And I'm kind of glad that story is directly dying down because, honestly, I am so tired of writing about her, talking about her. It just should be a non-story.
Well, I agree, but I am kind of glad that you brought it up only so we can talk about it one more time. And after tonight, we're never going to talk about that person ever again. But, you know, Rob, I'm really kind of conflicted because part of me does feel sorry for her, for how her viewpoint is causing her to react. Okay. And that's probably not a popular thing to say on an LGBT super gay radio show, but I'm not siding with her, so please don't think that, but I kind of understand her. How do I say this? Because I know this would be one of those things somebody's going to come back in like 5 years and go, remember when you know, were a supporter of Kim Davis? It's like, who is Kim Davis? And I was never a supporter of her. You know, what words are you twisting around? But, you know, you have people that have just such a narrow view of whatever. And no matter what you're going to tell them, they will only think that, well, we don't have to agree with them, and we all think that they're wrong. And I say we all, because my English is really good right now, but we all think that, you know, she's wrong. Nothing is going to change that. It'd be like, you know, Rob, your last name is Watson, and your last name is always going to be Watson. And you go, well, my last name is not Watson, and I don't want it to be Watson. Well, it's on your birth certificate. It's on your driver's license. It's on your credit card. It's on your health insurance. It's on your last name. Well, it's not Watson. It's like, yes, it is. And everybody else in the world goes, your last name is Watson. And you're like, no, it's not. It's not Watson. What is it? Well, it's not Watson. You know, and it's like, you know, you just, there's no, you know, there's no rationalization with it. And like you've talked about in your article before, she's really being set up as a financial pawn for all of these, you know, anti-marriage equality hate groups that are really out there to continue to raise money to line their own pockets, and they're using her as a scapegoat. So, you know, behind the scenes, you know that she's being coached. You know, Kim, you got to keep up the good fight, you know, because, you know, God loves you when you say these things, and it's not really hate, even though it's coming across like that. You know, I'm sure she doesn't have cable or doesn't read a newspaper, because, you know, how in the world, you know, are you going to play Eye of the Tiger coming out of jail and, you know, still go on and do the things that you're doing? I'm so befuddled.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing on her for me, because I'm not really into a lot of the super bashing of her. Plus,
right.
I don't see her hypocrisy and I do understand why people see this, but, you know, she's been married 4 times. And so she has had this kind of odd personal life that's behind her. And so a lot of people, in fact, a lot of the criticism of her and making fun of her is because her life up till now is not the life of somebody that you would think would come out and say, oh, you know, biblical man-woman, you know, marriage, you know, I'm doing this for Jesus kind of point of view. So they bob her over the head over that hypocrisy. Well, I kind of get where she is at in terms of that, because she only came to this great revelation about her faith 4 years ago. So a lot of this, her marriage choices and all that stuff, was well before that. That being said, what that means is if she is really holding herself to the same standards that she is holding gay people to, then with her faith, I don't believe this, but with her faith, she should be divorcing husband number four and going back to husband number one, because in the eyes of the Bible, that's the one she's actually truly married to. And
right.
If she doesn't, then she is, as she would put gay people, an unrepentant sinner, because she is not only has sinned, but she is staying with it, kind of thing. Now, I don't believe that, and I wouldn't pin that on her, but that from her
but from
robot,
a logic standpoint,
that's how it'd be. However, yeah. Here is where I have the bigger issue personally with her, and it was a little late in the game. It is with her most recent interviews where she is just hurt, and I feel for her. Her people say that God doesn't love her, that she is a sinner. And then her other comments about how, well, she really, you know, she was really critical of gay people wanting that piece of paper, and how could they be so shallow that would define their relationship? If, you know, she
and
feels really sorry
her.
For them,
yeah.
that you know, they need that. And that's where I find her to be really hypocritical.
Yep.
Because
yep.
If it meant so little, then why is it mean so much to her to withhold it? And she is she has gone beyond the point of, I just don't want to be involved in this. I'm going to step back. And, you know, I can't put my rubber stamp on it.
Right.
Because there have
right.
been lots of ways for her to step back, let other
yep.
people do it, no
yep.
harm, no foul. But
yep.
she's caught up in the Liberty Council engine. She's a
right.
big moneymaker for them. She's a talking point for presidential candidates. You know, she has hit the big time, and she's been seduced into it. So that part of it, you know, that's on her. I don't feel sorry for her for everything she's got by holding on to that part of it. You know, it's been made into a spectacle. She's played her part. The Huckabees, the Liberty Council, the Ted Cruz's, they're the puppet masters behind this whole thing. And I really loathe what they've done to it. She's the front woman. And as I said in my front article, you know, she's the one 5 years from now, we're going to look back and she'll still be the caricature
right.
behind it. She'll be the Anita Bryant getting the pie in the face
yep.
person.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
and that's
exactly.
that will be her legacy. And I feel badly for her for that. I don't think she gets what it's going to end up being for her. You know, and that's too bad. She will be dehumanized for
forever.
Perpetuity.
Yeah.
Right.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's do this. We're going to take a short commercial break, thanks to our friends at Rainbow Brew. And when we come back from the break, we're going to then dive in. And I'm stalling here because I'm trying to find the commercial. I rearranged everything in my studio here. But we're going to come back and talk to Rob about his new article and more in depth, because I found some things kind of surprising that he included in there. And I will tell you that I have updated the show page to actually include that link. So if you want to go take a look and read that, you certainly can do so. And then, again, we'll be back in just a minute, so sit tight. Right back with more Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
When it comes to coffee, freshness is queen. That's why Rainbow Brew believes you should have the freshest coffee, roasted to order in small batches and delivered to your door within a couple days. Whether you're purchasing for a coffee shop, restaurant, or home, Rainbow Brew is your one-stop shop for fair trade and organic coffee. Offering many unique blends, including AM 950's own Blue State blend. That's Rainbow Brew, the queen bean, a proud sponsor of the Morning Grind. Online at rainbowbrew.com. Brew something good today.
There we go. So that's a little thank you to our friends at Rainbow Brew out of Minneapolis, St. Paul. Never thought in a million years I'd hear that we have fresh coffee beans being grown in Minneapolis, Minnesota. But there we go. We have Rainbow Brew. You can go to their website and check them out. Or place an order, and they send it to you fresh the same day. So they'll either grind it for you or send you the whole beans. And, of course, tell them you heard them here on Rated G Radio. They would be tickled pink. Pardon the pun of using pink in that statement, but they would be tickled pink if you said, we heard you on the radio, so do that. We're joined tonight by KSCO 1080 AM superstar co-host of Out in Santa Cruz, Mr. Rob Watson. He is our in-studio guest for Super Gay Radio. I'm going to come up with like a soundbite or something like that. I'll have you produce one in your fancy studio and then, you know, send it to me, but... We've got Rob here.
Well, we use out or over the rainbow. So over the rainbow coffee.
Yeah, but you've got like a disco remix of Over the Rainbow that's really, really quite spectacular.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I love that piece.
So
I didn't do it, obviously, but yeah.
Well, no, but you have access to that cool stuff. For me, it looks like I've, you know, you pieced something together using Audacity, and it's like, oh, that's fancy. But you have this new article out. We're just talking about it, but I want to kind of dive into this because I was reading it tonight, and I was kind of shocked a little bit. And this is Rob's article. The link to it is on the show page for Rated G Radio, but it's a gay dad invites Pope Francis to meet my family face-to-face. And I thought, you know, it's going to be, oh, hi, Frank. You know, thanks for coming to the States. Come on over. We're going to have, you know, fish fry on Saturday or Friday night. And, you know, you can come and hang out and we'll play Uno. But to be honest, the letter that you wrote was, I'm going to say, a little tense. I was surprised at the tone and the content and everything that was in there. I don't know why. I just thought you were going to cut the Pope a little slack, but you were like right on it. So can you tell us about the article and what prompted this, besides the fact that this is, you know, a huge media event for everybody right now?
Well, to be really honest with you, I got an email the other day, like 2 days ago, from my editor at Gay Star News. And so he actually requested it. He said, you know, gee, the Pope's coming to the United States. It would be great if you could write up something because it deserves commentary from you, was kind of his comments about it. Now, I had written the Pope before. I actually wrote a letter to the Pope before he was the Pope. It was when the previous Pope had resigned and all the cardinals were in Rome and they were, you know, trying to figure out who the next Pope was going to be. And I wrote kind of a wish list of what I hoped the next pope would be like. And I had 4 points in it. And I ended the article with, you know, be amazing, surprise us. And lo and behold, I think in a lot of ways, Pope Francis has actually done that. He's been kinder, gentler, humbler. And, you know, really very, very counter to the last Pope that was opulent and arrogant and, you know, just it was hard to find anything really nice to say about him. So, but that being said, Pope Francis has done kind of this two-step with LGBT people. One, he has made comments that have been kind of on the kind side, saying, you know, who am I to judge, which was really astounding given the rhetoric that has come out of the Catholic Church. So that was really cool. But then he did things like host this huge conference in Rome last year called the Humanum that was about as bad and anti-gay as you could get. I mean, it was just really, really atrocious in terms of the propaganda that it was putting out there. I mean, it was likening male and female reproduction to, or it wasn't even likening, it was almost fantasizing that the earth was created from this male entity and female entity, the female entity being the ocean, the male entity being land coming together, and therefore all relationships had to reflect this thing, which was like, what? I mean, like, you're just making this crap up. I mean, this isn't reality. It's earth and water and, you know, elements, and it's much more complicated than this fancy mythology that you're putting out there. So just the trash talk that has happened from the Catholic Church about especially like families like mine has been out there. So the tone of my letter is really acknowledging that potentially Pope Francis is this kind, humble, good-hearted person where you could sit down and have this conversation about what really makes a family. And a lot of the rhetoric that I get, in fact, if you go to the New Civil Rights Movement where my article appears, there's already a commentator on there who has basically said, to me specifically, your kids aren't really that great. You know, they're not carrying on your bloodline. They're not carrying on your heritage. Not that great. Just, you know, fake family is kind of his point of view. And so that is what Pope Francis is inspiring, is that kind of mindset looking at my kind of family. And the point of the article is, you know, come sit down, come see who we are. And if you go under the covers, and it's not a Pollyanna thing, it's you look at my two sons, and they come from parents that would have killed them if they had stayed with their parents. And my one son, Jason, comes from a heritage that, by all rights, he should be a Catholic young man. His parents were Catholic. They would have had him baptized in the church. They did this small thing of ingesting heroin when he was still 6 weeks out from being born and caused him to come early. I mean, if they'd done it a little bit earlier, he wouldn't even be alive. He'd be a miscarriage. And, you know, that was what his natural parents had set up for him. And that isn't his fate. He is my son. Everything in me says we were destined to be a family. And he is a wonderful young man, and I love him to the depths of my soul. And that's where he came from. So my invitation to the Pope is come see us, see what we have become, see what love has put together, and we are a real family.
Well, and you also shared in your article a little about Jesse as well, you know, and because he, you know, you're talking about how your family came together. You know, you're a foster, parent for him first, if I'm reading this correctly, and if memory serves, and you know, fate from a, you know, again, I'm not poking on the Catholics, because we could be talking about Lutherans or Methodists or any other group. So, but since this is the Catholic hour, you know, his upbringing was Catholic as well, and where he was at ended up being a real horrible situation. And unfortunately for him, but you know, the grand scheme of things, fortunately for him and you and your family, you know, things, you know, played out the way they did, and he ended up coming to you permanently.
Right.
Does he have
his family wasn't Catholic, but pleased him with him was the, and this is specific to the Catholic Church, in the 1990s, they put out documents that said specifically same-sex parents raising kids were doing violence to their children. That was the word they used. Church verbiage was, you are doing violence to your children by raising them and being same-sex parents. And my point about Jesse was, you come into our home and your church has said that same-sex parents do violence. There's no violence with my parenting of my children. However, in the case of Jesse, he did come from violence. His birth father, that is why he is here, because of the violence enacted on him as a two-year-old from his birth father, who, you know, we were actually in a program where his birth father was trying to get custody. I mean, that is how that could have worked out. But because of that abuse, that ended, and he became my son permanently.
Well, good. I'll say good for you, and I'm glad that. I mean, how do you say that nicely, or what's the right way to say that, Rob? Because now I feel like I'm saying the wrong thing by saying good for you guys, when that was a horrible thing for him to have to go through.
You know, it's one of the weird paradoxes of life. It was a horrible thing for him to go through, and it was horrible. It was when it happened over one weekend. We picked him up. He was very bruised. Something had obviously happened, and we took him right to the social worker, and that's where the case went. The next 2 weeks, I slept right next to his crib, and this is a child that slept through the night previous to this, and he woke up screaming through the night for the next 2 weeks, and I was right there grabbing him up, holding him, you know, being there for him, and it was a horrible thing. The bond it forged for him and I, unbreakable. You know, so it's like, you know, we go through as humans these things, and you get through them, and they can make your life stronger. So, I mean, that's kind of the bottom line there. But, it's what happened. But he was meant to be my son. I know it again. Down to the bottom of my soul. And I talk to people who come from these dogmatic places, and this is where it's non-denominational. I've been told it by Catholics. I've been told it by other Christians, where they come in and they go, well, your family wasn't God's plan. It's like, yeah, it was. I know it was. And there's nothing that you, stranger, can come into my life and say it wasn't, because it most definitely was. These kids don't have my DNA, but they have my soul.
Powerful, powerful. Hey, can I ask you, and if you don't want to share, this is okay. How long after Jesse came back to you, did he take to, you know, I don't know if you ever get over it, but did he get past the nightly waking up and screaming and that type of thing?
The nightly waking up and screaming was like 2 weeks. But
wow.
He carried on the memory of it, or the reaction to it, for a good few years after that, because this is a kid who is so social. I mean, he's charming. He loves people. He goes to school, and getting to the parking lot is a pain because he sees 15 people he knows. He wants to roll down the window and go, hi. And so he's always been that way. And so even as a little toddler, he was always that kind of social kid, running around. And, you know, it's like we'd walk in a room and he was off with his friends and doing all this stuff. Whenever somebody came into the room who was of the stature of his birth father, he would run over to me and grab my leg.
Wow.
And, I mean, we would be at a fast food restaurant, and somebody walked in who was big like that, and he'd run over to me, and unfortunately, he would say audibly, "Daddy, that man is a bad man." And he'd say,
"Oh, my
God." Pardon my slang. Of course, he's saying it to this huge truck driver guy who just walked in, "That man's a bad
right.
man." And I'm going, okay, sorry. Long story. Don't tell you personally. So that was with him for a while. To this day, I don't think it's there, although who knows how that could come up. Our psyches are tricky things, but he carried it for a while.
Well, it sounds like he's on the right path here. So what else is going on in the exciting world of super gay that we need to know about this week? Or this
well,
month.
There are a couple of guys that have kind of pissed me off. Not even though I was coming off the Pope that way, but one that is kind of note, he's actually a gay person, is director Roland Emmerich of the new film Stonewall. And I don't know if you've seen that or
why some people are a little upset about it. And I think this would be fun to talk about. So do you want to tell the listeners what the big to-do is?
Well, this is kind of, again, I'm actually more irritated about what has just happened than how it started. But, yeah, let me backtrack. So the trailer for the movie coming out. It's a big Hollywood movie about Stonewall is coming out, and they put out a trailer for it. Now, I don't know if you remember, but a few years ago, there was a small independent film about Stonewall that came out, also somewhat fictionalized, but it stayed much truer to a lot of the events that actually happened. But anyway, this big Hollywood blockbuster is coming out, and director Roland Emmerich is a well-known director. He is gay, but he is well-known for, like, Independence Day and The Day After and kind of these big big special effects-type films. So the trailer came out, and in the trailer, the lead character of the movie Stonewall is this handsome, young, white, played in the movie, gay male from the Midwest. And he is the center of the attention. And in the trailer, he throws the brick that starts the riot and saves the day, and he's on the car, and everybody else is kind of a backdrop to him. And the LGBT community went nuts because it is a complete rewrite of history. The Stonewall riots, the people that were really attacked at the Stonewall Inn, were transgender people and cross-dressers, and, you know, that was the environment. And they were so tired of being the ones constantly beaten and ridiculed and persecuted in New York. So this one night when the police raided the bar yet again and attacked them, they were the ones that stood up and went, enough, and threw the bricks, started the riots, and then everybody in Greenwich Village kind of came out, and it was, you know, it lasted for a few days. So gay people did get involved. I mean, it wasn't like they were, you know, completely invisible, but they were kind of weaved in, you know, later. But, I mean, this was the most vulnerable people of color, you know, transgender, that were attacked. They were the ones that got out there and were, you know, it was sort of like, what else do we have to lose? You've tried to take all our dignity. You know, we're fighting back. We're mad as hell. And that's what sparked the whole Stonewall thing. That was not the first uprising for gay rights, but it was the one that caught national attention and really steamrolled. So anyway, cut to modern day. This movie comes out. You know, a lot of the community are completely offended by the rewrite of history. The studio, the director, the lead actor are all trying to backpedal and say, no, no, the other people are depicted. No, no, it's not like you think. You know, just the trailer looked that way. And, you know, and they have since released another trailer that looks much more diverse and kind of picks up on the criticism and everything else. So, okay, well and good. The movie's coming out. You know, people are, and a lot of people still have bad taste in their mouth. So, director Roland Emmerich goes on BuzzFeed and gives an interview. And his interview, to me, did more damage than the original trailer. Because he basically says, listen, I'm a gay white male. You know, I'm the director of the film. I got to put myself in this. Because, you know, it's like, gotta have me in the story in order for it to be real. So I superimposed myself in it. Plus, you know, this is being made not for gay people. This is being made for the whole country. So it's got to be sellable. And so they're going to relate to this white kid from the Midwest much more than they would from, you know, African-American transgender people. You know, that's why I had to do it this way. And it was like, I was embarrassed. I was sorry I was a white gay male myself. I mean, it was just like, ugh, that is icky on a big, big scale. I just think of any other story. I mean, if it, you know, would we be okay if this was a white straight director that said, oh, you know what, I took the Stonewall story, but, you know, straight America is not going to relate to you gay people, so I had to have a straight white guy be the center of that and you know, he started the riots at Stonewall to, you know, impress his girlfriend, you know, and because I've got to infuse myself into this story. So I just find that disgusting.
Well, you know, I don't know. The people that I've listened to today on the radio, so I have not seen the movie, and as most of the listeners know, I tend not to go to the movies, and it's more of a public service than anything else, because when I go to the movies, I know which movie I'm going to see. I know I'm going to get a bucket of popcorn, and I turn my iPad off before I go and sit down. So I'm not deciding which movie I'm going to see by walking up and saying, gee, what do you want to see tonight? I already know. When I get to the concession stand, I'm not thinking about, should I get the pizza, hot dog, root beer float, chicken wings, spaghetti, or whatever. I get my popcorn and I go sit down. And when I go sit down, I shut up. And if you want to talk to me, Rob, guess what's not going to be happening? Dialogue. You're going to be talking to yourself and I'm going to be going, be quiet. This is the inside of the movie thing. So it just drives me nuts when people do all of that. And then, you know, it's 5 minutes into the movie and you're still telling people, you know, turn your friggin' phone off. I will tell you, okay, we're going to go back and talk about this, but I'm on a soapbox now. So I was with my friends RJ and Nolan. We went to go see the movie, what's the earthquake movie that was just at San Andreas?
And oh, okay, yeah.
This goes back a couple of months. So we're in the theater, and it's like a 10 o'clock show or something like that. And this, and I'm going to say this, so don't get mad at me, but this is just the emotion coming out. The stupid woman, it could have been a stupid man, so it's not a woman or a man thing. It just happened to be a woman. So the stupid woman about four rows in front, about three, you know, seats over, you know, she's doing Facebook Instant Messenger, you know, like 5 or 6 minutes into the movie. And we're like, shut your fucking phone off. Pardon my French.
Yeah.
And she would do it. And finally, the RJ, you know, he should be in the NBA or something, but he's taking, you know, kernels of popcorn and it's going pew. And we're like, you know, four or five rows back, so she can't see who it is. But everybody's secretly going, yay! And, you know, hitting her phone with the popcorn. And she finally puts it away. But it's like, you know, if you are that important, you need to not be in this theater. Because whatever's going on in your life really takes precedence over that. And you should not be depriving your audience, not the movie theater, outside of the movie theater, of your presence. So you go take care of your business, and when you can be a good movie patron, come back in. It wasn't like she, you know, because normally I would say, it's those kids, Rob, and they were, this is like some woman probably in her 50s or something like this. So it's like, you know, you have no excuse to have bad manners. But, okay, so.
Yeah, no, I'm just like you. In fact, I've got my movie routine, and I've even stopped thinking of the movies as a thing to do with a date or with other people, you know,
right.
I take myself to the movies because I finally got to the point where, you know, unless I'm going with somebody who just happens to be so in sync with me, I got tired of watching a movie that I really enjoyed, that I really, you know, it may be sappy, maybe sentimental, maybe stupid, whatever, but I'm on cloud nine, just totally enjoying it. You know, plus I love to listen to the whole soundtrack all the way through the credits, which drives almost everybody else, I know, crazy, but, you know, those musicians did it too, and I love the sound system, so I'm enjoying the whole experience, and I hate turning to the person that I went to see the movie with and going, oh, my God, I just love that, and having them go, eh. It's like,
right.
That, eh. It's like cold water on my evening. It's like, why did, you know, I just spent, you know, $40 for this experience, and I was enjoying it, and you ended on it.
Right. I agree.
Yes.
You know, anyway, so getting back to this movie here, I haven't seen it. I probably won't go see it. The people, the overwhelming consensus of everybody that was calling in saying, I've seen the movie today, and it was, you know, it was this or that or the other thing, they were all like, you know, you really didn't do anybody a favor here, and we all really don't like this. And these are from people who are, you know, very liberal as far as Showgirls, that was a great movie. You know, when you have people that will give anything a chance and think Rotten Tomatoes, you know, they give Rotten Tomatoes a good chance, and to have them say, this is a movie you really didn't need to rewrite history on in this manner because it's really offensive. I don't know. So
I'll tell you, do yourself a favor.
Anybody,
yeah. Rent the previous Stonewall movie small indie film. It also infuses this white boy from the Midwest into the film. There was a fictional guy that fits that description, but he is not presented as the mover and shaker of liberation in the movie. He's more the guy that all plays up and he reacts to it all, which is a little more appropriate. But it is a sweet film. It carries a lot of the same points as this one. But I'd go rent that one. I think it carries the message in a much more effective way.
I
say that not having, my disclaimer, I have not actually seen this film. I have read reviews that have seen the film now, but the points made by the director in that interview just made my eyes spin.
Yep. And I just am like, oh, your PR people should have coached you differently. Even if you really think that, you're just putting a nail in the coffin. Your entire support system wants you to be successful, and you were just like crapping on it. On that happy note, Rob, we are out of time, because I'm going to play a song just for you to end the show. So remind everybody what you're doing this Saturday at 7.
This Saturday at 7, listen on the web on www.outinsantacruz.com. If you're in the Northern California area, it is AM Radio 1080 and Out in Santa Cruz, and we will be talking about the Pope.
There we go. So, everybody, it's Rob Watson. Rob, whether you know it or not, I've already scheduled you for October. I think I gave you my last date, so if you can't do it, you'll just have to tell me and I'll do something else. But I put you down.
As long as it's not Halloween, I'm listening to the Witch Sisters. I'm going trick-or-treating with my kids, but other than that, I'm all yours.
Well, I'm not going to be doing that on a show on Halloween either, but I've got you scheduled for Wednesday, October 28th. So we're going to have kind of like our super gay week. We're going to be having celebrity chef John Polk on the show on Monday. This is a month from now. Okay, so wow, we're talking about shows a month from today. Anyway, we're going to have Super Gay Radio Week with John Polk on Monday, Transgender Tuesday, then we'll have Super Gay Radio on Wednesday, October 28th. So in the meantime, this song is a favorite of Rob's off of my album Blonde Jesus. It's available on iTunes, Amazon, and of course on my website. If you'd like an actual physical CD, I'll autograph it personally to you and mail it to you. Please don't drive distracted tomorrow. On Thursday's show, we've got LGBT author Jace Payne. I just pinged him on Facebook and he says, is the interview going to be on Skype or is it on the telephone? So I just gave him all of that. So he's already excited to be on the show. This is for Rob and we'll see everybody live on Thursday. Don't drive distracted, folks.
Come join me on my journey, taking these first few steps, breaking out, breaking free, finding out who I want to be. There are a lot of notions in this world that people think we should believe about second best and taking less and not following our dreams. I know I want more. To take a chance.
I am.
Believe and receive.
I am.
Attract and allow.
I am.
I am. want in life. Let me walk with you as you light your path. Show me how you'll lead us home as you open the gates of change. Let me hear you tell your truth, reaching out for what is right, rising up from the ashes. You're a phoenix.
Listening to Rated G Radio.